What up? Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have none other than my cousin. That's right, folks. Mr. Kurt Anderson is on the show. So we're very, very, very excited to talk to him. But before we do that, let's talk about our sponsors. Okay, folks. So I've been telling you all season long why Four Eyes is awesome. But I'm going to tell you again. So, number one, they have an amazing core product, which is all about re-engaging with visitors from your website and getting them back to the website. So, based on all this shopper intelligence, right, of actions that people are doing on the website to get show purchasing intent or intent in buying a vehicle, they're delivering those customers back to your website. And they're giving customers alternatives, which is very, very important, folks, because we are in an alternative-based market. What that means is that consumers cannot find what they're actually looking for, and they're settling. So the more options you give them, the more chance you're going to have of selling them a vehicle. They also have an amazing report called the Coffee Report, which I like to look at almost on a daily basis, and that has a bunch of information that plugs in directly with activity from your CRM. And so it bridges the gap between those two. And of course, their unified data platform, which is all about data and, you know, kind of connecting the dots for you. So make sure to check them out. Go to the show notes, click the link, and sign up. It's absolutely free. $3.99, folks. You have nothing to lose. Check it out. And if you don't like it, then, you know, don't use it. But check it out. Four Eyes. Try it today. All right. So, like I said, I have my cousin on the show, Mr. Kurt Anderson. Kick us off with an intro, sir. Tell us about you.
Well, Herb, thank you. What an honor. What a privilege. Now, of course, you come from the handsome side of the family. I'm not sure what happened on my side. But so it's absolutely wonderful to be here. What an honor. What a privilege. I love the work that you're doing here. You're a fierce advocate. So my name is Kurt Anderson. I'm a number one job, you know, since we're related, is I'm a girl dad. And so that's the number one job. I'm an e-commerce evangelist for manufacturers, meaning that I help folks figure out this whole e-commerce thing. And that's my jam. So that's what we'll be digging into today.
Yeah, super excited about that, man. And let's just kick it off with a big question. And that is, Amazon announced that in 2024, they're going to allow people to purchase Hyundais on their platform, and other brands, I think the article said, are going to follow. So for people on my side of the industry, of the automotive retail side, this has been half of a nightmare. The full nightmare would be that Amazon announces that they're going to sell their cars online, and then they have some sort of partnership with a Carvana-esque type of a company. So that part hasn't really come to fruition yet, but they did announce this, that they will be doing this in 2024, selling new cars directly to consumer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny. So we do a lot of, so part of my shtick is I do a lot of webinars and workshops. I work with like different universities and different agencies and that type of thing. And one of the most common questions for our audience of manufacturers is like, how do I get into e-commerce without, you know, disrupting the market or upsetting my customers or violating the food chain, you know, distributors and that type of thing. And this is a perfect example of, you know, when the major auto dealers are going to start completely disrupting the market. Now, what do? You know, and it's a lot of guts and courage for the auto manufacturers to take that leap, because like, what are they going to do about their dealers? But it's, you know, the market is pulling things this way. Carvana makes it so easy to do business with. I think, like, aren't you an auto trader guy? Is that in your background?
I used to work for Auto Trader.
Yeah.
Kelly Blue Book.
You know, so like, you know, you're a bit of a pipe. Yeah, you're a pioneer in that whole e-commerce space and like, you know, figuring out things to get, you know, for, you know, consumers in the car industry. I think, you know, once one does it, they're all going to start doing it, and it's just going to completely disrupt the entire market. And what's going to be fascinating, and now like you're actually, consumers can actually go on like a Ford website you know, and it really puts a light on, like, what are the dealers going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can now go on to a Ford website and I can build, they have a configurator tool where, like, I can start building my own car and order my own car. So it's a fascinating time. It could be a scary time. So I think for the dealers, either how do you embrace it? How do you be a part of it? Or how do you sit on the sidelines and whine and complain about the market changing? So anyway, that's my two cents. What are your thoughts on it, Bruce?
Yeah, so I definitely want to talk about one of the things that we could be doing. Like, I think that dealers, on the marketing side at least, I think dealers need to create a moat around their business. It's not predicated on, I have inventory that, you know, you can get here because some company just, you know, gave me a brand to put on the front of my building. You know what I mean? Like, right. I want to get into that here later on in the show, but on this whole thing for Amazon and Hyundai and this partnership or whatever, my question is, or my thoughts are, is the customer really ready for that? Is the customer truly ready for that? Because here's the thing, like, dealers, we haven't figured out a way to sell a $20 item on our website, much less a $50,000 vehicle. And then you have companies like Amazon that have been very successful at that with their garage program. And so that's a thought, man. Like, what is that experience going to look like? I think is the biggest question. And what's the aftercare of that? So they sell the vehicle. Are they going to offer any finance options? Is that all happening at the dealership? And they're just like, buy it on Amazon, but then you go to the dealership to pick it up. And once you're there to pick it up, then it's the same dealer experience. And is Amazon really going to put their trusted reputation in the hands of dealers that they don't know how that's going to happen when they get there to pick up the vehicle? I don't know. I there's just a lot of questions on what that's going to look like.
It's hard to bet against Amazon, right? So for, you know, since I'm your older cousin, I'm old enough to remember when Amazon just sold books, for goodness sakes. Yeah. You know, like, they, I don't know if anybody out there is under the age of, 35, that is a true story. Amazon used to just sell books. And so the thing is, they started coming into every market and just cannibalizing, and they're like, well, that's not going to work, but they made it work. I think, you know, let's go on a dealer side. Let's say you and I own a dealership, and, like, this, you know, a big giant gorilla comes into a market and disrupts it. What do you do? It forces you. You've got to be over the top on your value proposition, right? You've got, you know, like, what's happening on, so I work with a lot of manufacturers, and I say this. What's happening today in the B2B space is what happened. This isn't new. It's just, it's hitting new industries. So in 1999, you know, when the dot-com bubble was hitting, you know, the internet, including Amazon, was disrupting major industries. You know, for those of us old enough to remember, like, Borders, bookstore. But let's talk about the flower industry, for example. You're like, what do flowers have to do with cars, right? Well, flower shops would sell their product, you know, and, like, you know, hey, you live in Las Vegas, I'm here in New York, and I could send flowers to you, and how that would, and all of a sudden, like, this company called 1-800-Flowers came online and started completely disrupting the market. And so what it did is it took a lot of that market share away from, like, that local florist. The local florists are like, okay, either A, if I want to stay in business, I have to get more creative, or I can sit around and complain about this market's changing. So now, like, you'll see flower shops where, like, maybe they have a coffee shop inside, or maybe they're collaborating with other like-minded service industries. Or maybe they're going to go over top of that customer intimate service for weddings or for funerals, you know, and, like, hey, as far as the day-to-day birthday stuff, or I'm sending things to my cousin Herb, I'm going to lose that business. I have to accept that, but I have to get more creative and really deliver that high value proposition. Mm-hmm. So for the dealers, maybe it's just more aggressive on the service side, more aggressive with your oil changes, your services, you know, other components that go inside the car. You know, what are other things that you can be targeting? I have a teenage daughter, just got her license a month ago. You know, how can be targeting young folks who now will be lifetime customers because I caught them at 16 or 17, and how could I get them on board early where I can, you know, because I'm not going to beat Amazon at their own game, but how can I create my own, you know, I'm a big proponent of that book, Blue Ocean Strategy. If Amazon's going to be taking away my current little monopoly, like I have a Toyota or a Ford dealership, and for decades, I've had my like you said, the moat around this. Well, if Amazon's going to start chipping away, I've got to start getting more creative. So anyway, that's a couple of cents or my little rant there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think what in the industry, and it's not panic. I don't think anybody's panicking. I think we, you know, people in the industry, decision makers within dealerships and manufacturers alike, I think saw something like this coming, right? That's why we've mentioned it for years now, and we've been talking about the potential of something like this happening. But I think that it's not going to be as easy for Amazon to disrupt this side of the business. And the reason why I say that is because in order for that to truly happen, they would have to take ownership of the whole experience. And based on what I've read, I don't think that that's the case. And I think a lot still remains to be seen on, you know, I just don't believe that a lot of customers want to truly transact with these, with this high price items, remotely or in that way, you know, even if being a new car, I think that, you know, you get to spend certain amount of money, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or more, and you want to touch, feel, you know, experience and test drive all those things. And so, but I don't know what that experience is going to look like. I don't know if they're going to offer the opportunity to go to a local dealer, test drive the car. Like, there's just a lot of questions. We'd have to truly see how that's going to be built out. But I don't think it's going to be as easy as it. Well, I shouldn't say that it was easy for them to disrupt the industries that they did. They were just, you know, they capitalized on the opportunity. But I, you know, you think Amazon, you think how big they are, you think that they were able to disrupt, and then you automatically assume that that's going to be able to happen again on the automotive retail side. And I don't know, man. Do you think that it would be easy for them to get in here into this space and do that, or do you think that it's going to be something that's going to be slow burning, and they're going to make some mistakes, learn from them, and it'll be a couple of years before it's fully in a place where it truly will be something that physical dealerships need to worry about?
Yeah, I think you're great question, and you know, you just look at any disruption, right? I mean, in auto space, we can look at Uber and Lyft, you know, like how that completely disrupted the market, you know, and early adopters are going to come in. I think maybe, you know, I don't want to say age discriminant, you know, I was going to say like Gen Zers or millennials, but you know, it could be in any age, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, you know, so if somebody like people are buying houses now, sight unseen, right? You know, they can buy $500,000 house and, you know, they're going to do a tour online or what have you. Are people going to buy that vehicle for convenience? You know, if you and I are sitting here rolling the dice and just, you know, hey, what's our bet? Yeah, I do think that there's going to be a lot of people that are willing to do that. However, it's like, okay, well, what do I do about insurance? How do I get my plates? How do I get my car registered? Mm-hmm. How do I, you know, so-and-so? What do I do for the warranty? How do, you know, like, you know, so maybe I don't want to sound too old school of like, boy, you need that hands down. I want to say, sit down with somebody and shake a hand. And, you know, so are there going to be consumers that don't care and are just going to click the button because it's cool and it's exciting? I'm sure there are, right? And maybe as it goes that direction, people are going to jump on board. The insurance companies are going to be like, okay, how can I make this as convenient as possible? So I think the key for internet or e-commerce is how do you create a frictionless transaction? Mm-hmm. How can I make it as easy as humanly possible for somebody to buy? This is how I buy a car. My guy that I've known for years and years and years, I probably bought, you know, 10 cars from him. I text him. I'm like, dude, I'm ready for a car. Okay, what are you looking for? What deal do you have? I mean, like, we text back and forth. I show up. There's a car. Half the time I test drive it. Half the time I don't. And he makes it so easy for me. I hug him. I thank him. I tell him, like, dude, you can't retire because, like, you make this so easy. Because when people do it, when you buy a car, like, you know, a big transaction, what do you do it? Once every 3, 5, 7 years? Mm-hmm. Is there an average? How often does somebody buy a car?
I think it's every 5 years. I think homes are 7 years, so like cars every, are 5 years.
So every 5 years. So you know the key to customer service? Herb, I don't know about you, but on this Anderson side of the family, like we're not the sharpest tools in the shed, man. But the thing, when you walk into like a business, nobody wants to feel dumb. Mm-hmm. Nobody, like your customers don't like, why do people not ask questions? Because nobody wants to look like the dummy, right? Why do people not go into a new technology? Because nobody wants to have the guts and courage, like, what if it doesn't go right? And now it's my responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing is, when you're buying a car once every 5 years, I'm not an expert at it. I haven't done it since, I don't remember what I had for breakfast, let alone how I bought a car 5 years ago. So I want a good nurturing experience. If you go buy a car, and say you and I go buy the exact same car, identical, they're down to everything. It's identical car. And if you pay $3,000 less than I do, because you're on the smart side of the Anderson family, you pay $3,000 less than I do, but you really didn't like the person you sold it to you. You felt like maybe they were a little shaky, but you paid $3,000 less. I bought the exact same car. I paid $3,000 more, but I love the person I bought it from. I think they have integrity. I felt they made me feel important. They made me feel like the smartest guy in the room. Who walked away with a better deal?
You did.
You walked away with a better price point.
Right.
But maybe I walked away feeling better about the experience, right?
Yeah. And that's...
So I think, you know, so go ahead.
I was going to say, that's exactly it right there. The experience is what makes the difference, right? It's how you feel. And that's when we talk about experience, it's a feeling. If you feel good about the purchase, right, you'll pay more, but you feel good about it. So what do you care? You feel good. So you don't care that you paid more money because it was worth it. But you could pay less money, have a shitty experience, pardon my French, and it doesn't matter that that financially you're net positive, right? You still feel bad about the purchase. So that's the thing that, right, you know, like, you're totally dead on. That's it right there. And that's what I was talking about earlier. That's the moat that you need to create around your business.
Right.
You need to find a way for your customers to feel good about transacting at your dealership. Doesn't matter what you're selling ultimately. At the end of the day, it's a commodity. They can get that new car at 20 different other dealerships. But what they're not going to be able to get is the experience. They're not going to be able to get that feeling. They're not going to be able to walk out of that experience or out of that dealership feeling like winners. Like, I won here. Doesn't matter how much I paid. I feel good about what I did. So,
right. Exactly. You know, like back to the example that I just gave you, you know, if I walk away, paid $3,000 more, but maybe, you know, like, hey, we filled the tank for you on the way out. And, you know, we got you these new mats. Don't tell anybody. Oh, you're getting free Sirius for a year. And hey, why don't you come back and we just got you 4 free oil changes. And hey, how about, you know, bring your daughter down. We're having like a little, you know, festival at our car dealership next week and we're giving away little, you know, whatever, you know, like. So when you can do those little added things that can't, you know, but if those things don't matter to you, yeah, go to Amazon, hit the checkout button, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of things that the dealers can do. We can dig deeper into that, you know, the things that I work with manufacturers on, like how can they separate themselves? I love what you said. Like, how do you uncommoditize? Is that a word, Herb? Did I just make that up? Is that a word, uncommoditize? I don't know.
We're going to say it is. Approved.
thank you. So, hey, how do we uncommoditize ourselves? I don't know. You know, us Andersons aren't. So, anyway, I tell you one. So, to go on a little rant, one thing that we love to preach and to manufacturers is how to create that value, to create that like that trust relationship. We always say, you know what? Instead of like trying to outspend the competition, and when you think of dealers, you know, cars, you like, hey, come down to our lot. We got the best deal ever. Check this out. Blah, 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 blah. The little tagline that we love to use is, how do you out-teach the competition? How do you out-teach the competition? So how do you dedicate yourself to just being that relentless educator? Where I live, like, we get snow, dude. I know, like, you probably can't relate to that in Vegas, but we get snow. So, you know, maybe I'm going to do a video. Hey guys, did you change your snow, you know, put on your snow tires because, hey, you know, when it snows, you want to do X, Y, Z. Hey, today we're coming into the holidays. Did you know for your car, you should do this? Or, hey, did you think of this for, here's a top 10, you know, little Christmas list or stocking stuffer for your car lover and your family. Like, if you could just come in and just be this fierce educator, that's how you separate yourself from Amazon. Because Amazon, you're never, ever going to talk or deal with a human being.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Like, one of the advantages of the dealership itself, which is why it's been a beneficial relationship between the manufacturer and the consumer, is the dealership in the middle. Because, I mean, think about it. The OEM is a factory, basically. They produce a product that they want to sell. So they're not really concerned about they're concerned about the loyalty aspect, but they're not really concerned on delivering the experience. right? If they did, then they would just do it themselves and there would be no dealership. So they want to focus on producing, production. How many units can I produce and how many of these can be gone so that I can maximize my profits? The dealership, on the other end, is their whole existence for the better ones or the most effective ones should be predicated on loyalty. How can I get this customer to buy their first car here and subsequently buy the next 10 here without leaving this building, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And send me their family and friends and talk good about my dealership. And that should be the goal, right? And if you can do that effectively, if you can have that effective brand message and whatever it may be, right? Then you're going to win. And here's the thing, when you do those things, and I did a solo episode earlier today, and I was talking precisely about that. When you can do those things effectively, you have a moat around your business that protects you, not just against the times, but innovation as well. Because some of these technologies and the innovation is trying to, for lack of a better word, it's about efficiency, right? They're trying to, you know, make it more efficient for the consumer to get the commodity, because ultimately that's what you're buying. You're buying something material. But there's no personalization to the experience. And if you can offer that and brand it so that the customer associates your dealership with it, you know, has that brand message appeal to it, then you protect yourself against things like that. And it's not something that you ever have to worry about. So, you know, I think that to your point, I think that should be a big focus. And I think that's the advantage ultimately is that, like you mentioned, Amazon can't do that. Right? They can't shake your hand after the purchase. They can't go and introduce you to the service department. They can't welcome you to the family, right? So that's a very, very critical point you just made right now.
Yeah. And I think competition is great, man, right? Competition is fantastic. And I think thank you for the invite. I've checked out a bunch of your podcasts. I love what you're doing here, and that's just truly an honor. I just want to make sure I emphasize that.
Thank you, man.
But I love, you know, so a couple things that we preach and is that outteach, how to be that fierce educator. That's a wonderful way to build trust. And again, you know, like, you know, car dealerships, you know, they've always had a little bit of that reputation of like, oh geez, did I get taken? Did I overpay? That type of thing. So I think this is an opportunity or to like really step up their game from an education standpoint. The second thing I love, and I think you're kind of going that direction, Herb, is what we love to preach to our manufacturers as they're trying to figure out how to market themselves is community. How do you build community? So I don't care if you're in the most rural area, urban area, you know, where you're at in Vegas, is getting involved in that. And I know I'm being Captain Obvious, but it's, you know, the little league team, the soccer team, getting, you know, being out in the schools or like, you know, just being involved at healthcare, hospital, cancer, you know, those types of things. I think it's really going to step up, you know, it's lighting a fire in a greater sense of urgency for those dealerships to like, I love the analogy you're giving about the moat. Like when you buy a car here, you're supporting your fellow community members and we're out in the community. I think car dealerships, you know, traditionally for decades have done a great job at that. Mm-hmm. But it might force them or, you know, how can we get more creative? How can we be more involved? And how can we just really, I love your analogy of that moat. How can we put that around like, hey, we're part of your community here and you're supporting your neighbors and we're supporting you. And I think that's going to be another really important, more important than ever now that Amazon's getting.
For sure. But, you know, like, I mean, I just want to challenge everybody for a second to imagine a future where, and let's just talk, I'm just strictly talking about the car business, but imagine a future where there are no dealerships and there is no, there is no personalization and you are buying the car 100% online and you're spending 50 grand, 60 grand on an item that nobody shakes your hand on after the purchase. Nobody tells you, hey, here's the, welcome to the family. Here's the dealership. Nobody sends you the birthday card message. It's completely gone and you're strictly dealing with a company that has there's no human interaction. I mean, that just doesn't, I just refuse to believe that that's going to be the future of the industry. Now, There might be obviously an evolution to the experience for sure. I think it's needed. But I also don't think that consumers want a future like that where there's no dealership. I think that that doesn't solve anything either. So I think to your point earlier, what we need to be focusing on is how can we make that experience, how can we make that an experience? How can we truly, truly make that an experience? And so, I don't foresee that being something that is, I wouldn't even say disruption, because, you know, if you think about it, with all the technology that exists today, there has been no disruption to the automotive industry. Why do I say that? Because disruption means that the old model goes away, right? That's right. What disruption right. means. That's why Blockbuster right. was disrupted, because there are no more Blockbusters. But dealerships still exist, right? By and large, customers are still buying the car in the same way. So there really hasn't been a disruption to the model. So anyway, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, dude. So I'm old school. I'm still a pen and paper guy. I got it right here. Blockbuster. I had that right there. I had it right there. I was just, so for those of us old enough, you know, like Friday night, it's a Friday night. Hey, you know, significant other, whoever, you know, hey, on the way home, I'm going to stop at Blockbuster. I'm going to pick out a movie. I'm going to walk around, stand there for half an hour trying to, you know, oh, the top seller is gone. Now I got to grab, like, you know, that was a thing. And people are like, oh, I want to do, you know, people would go to the bookstore and spend hours mm-hmm. looking at the bookstore. People would read a newspaper, you know, so there's a lot of things that we, you know, that's how we did it. I think the challenge here, Herb, is when you think about the dealership, you know, so let's stick with Ford, okay? Ford in Detroit, and I think, are you a Michigan guy?
Yeah.
Did I see that? Are you a Michigan
yes,
guy?
Yes, sir.
So, all right.
Go
so,
Warriors. You know,
so you're a Michigan guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for, you know, I'm at Ford, and so the reality, if the consumer to have the relationship with Ford direct is going to be challenged, right? Henry Ford himself created the whole assembly line, just changed life, changed everything.
How ironic right? would that be, by the way? How ironic would it be that...
How ironic would that be? Think about that. Think about, you know, because the thing, and all that's going to do is the more custom that you make a car, like for Herb, personally, for myself, you know, like now you're getting away from that assembly line concept, and how are you going to get that car from Detroit to or Mexico, wherever it's being manufactured, to Maine, mm-hmm. to Miami, to San Diego, you know, to four corners of the country, right? So I think that's the challenge. Like, how is it possible to erase or eliminate dealerships altogether, right? So I think logistically that in itself is going to be one of the biggest challenges where, you know, we could disrupt the book market. We could disrupt, you know, CDs going to block, you know, from Blockbuster to Netflix or from music to Spotify or some of those technologies. So the thing is, the difference is the technology changed from a CD that we used to watch or a DVD that we would watch. Now I can just stream it. So that technology changed. As you're saying, the physical structure of the car doesn't change. It's just how I'm going to buy it is going to change. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so, and until they figure out the logistic factor. Now, are at some point in time, are dealerships going to be viewed as just an unnecessary expense? And I don't need the birthday card. I don't need to know what you guys are doing. I don't need to know that you're in the community. I don't need the dealership. I just want to, you know, that extra layer of cost. Are consumers going to say, you know what? I don't need it. So I think, I don't know what you feel. Consumers are going to dictate the market. Don't
oh,
you
yeah.
Think?
No, of course. As they always done, but I don't think that by and large, the customers are going to vote to not have that dealership experience. I think what the customer is saying, and they're screaming it at the top of their lungs, and they've been doing that for, you know, a decade now, is they want that experience to change. It's time for that experience to change. It's no longer acceptable that I go buy a car and I have to wait 5 hours to get my car. It's no longer acceptable that I want to do my, you know, the majority of my deal online in the comfort of my own home, and yet I can't get that done. It's no longer acceptable that, you know, I have to get inundated with communication and things that are not relevant to me or to my ownership or buying experience.
Right.
Those things need to change for sure. And this is a good place to segue, because I wanted to get your take on the whole e-commerce side of things. Like, instead of worrying Amazon, who is severely disadvantaged, in my opinion, when it comes to being able to sell vehicles, you know, for all the things that we've discussed earlier, what can dealers do to kind of flip that on its head and become better at e-commerce? Because again, we're trying to, with digital retailing and all these things, we're trying to sell the customer a $50,000 piece of equipment, but we haven't figured out how to sell them a $20 wiper blade, right?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that a little bit backwards? Shouldn't we already have some sort of e-commerce, or have had already in the past 10, 20 years, some sort of e-commerce built in to our website experience?
Yeah. Dude, gosh, you know, man, great, great, great Grandpa Anderson just put us exactly on the same page. I've got it written down right there. So this is, dude, this is absolutely perfect. Let's go there, man. Let's geek out for a minute on that. You know, so again, we've got the Anderson cousin Anderson car dealership, right? Whatever, pick your flavor. What are we selling? We're selling Ferraris,
right? Yeah, of course, man. You know? Yeah.
All right. So we're selling Ferraris. But, you know, right down the line, like, if we, you know, we're catching up, I don't know about you, I'm catching up with millennials. We're like, you know, notoriously, they don't want to call, right? They don't want to pick up the phone. I agree with them. It's easy. Like, who wants to pick up the phone? I don't need to talk to someone. Like, just let me know. If I could go on a dealership website and not have to pick up the phone and go, you know what? I had to get something checked the other day in my car. I call. I'm old school. I call. Don't pick up. I go to their website. I can't book an appointment. Guess what? I went somewhere else. Right. It wasn't convenient.
Yeah.
I went somewhere else. I have a Chevy. I went to a different dealer to get my car looked at because they didn't make it convenient for me. It just on Monday.
Yeah.
So the thing is, if on their website, they've got to be fierce on e-commerce. Just like, hey, if Amazon's going to have that product, I need to have that product. Mm-hmm. I need to have a video. I need to have somebody standing there like, hey guys, this is what the car looks like. This is what it's like when you sit in it. This is what it, you know, the steering wheel. Here's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Everything that you want to know about the car. As you're pointing out, you need windshield wipers? Right here. You need to get an oil change? Book your appointment. You want to do this? You want to book a test drive? Like, make it as easy as possible. You know what they need to do here?
Mm-hmm.
It's right there. Like, it's flipped. Mobile now is greater than laptop, desktop.
Sure.
You know? And like, if you're a dealer, I would just be relentlessly thinking, what does in our training, our workshops and stuff, we call our those ideal customers, we call them soulmates. Like, what does your soulmate need today? Right. And what does Amazon do? Amazon has a famous thing. They call it the empty chair. What is the empty chair?
Yeah, it's the customer.
Every meeting, there sits an empty chair, right?
It's the customer.
You know it. You know the empty chair, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're turning to that chair and they're saying, hey, customer. Or like in our training, we're like, hey, soulmate, what do you need from me right now? Like, you're stressed out. You've got mortgage payments. Kids are going to college or whatever. Whatever you're going through in life, how can we help you not be stressed? How can I help remove that stress? And that dealership needs to sit around, have the empty chair and saying, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, or hey, 16-year-old, or hey, college kid, or whoever their soulmate is that they're trying to target, and ask themselves, what do they need? How can I make your life easier so we can maintain this long-lasting relationship? Because, man, we love you. We want to keep this thing going, right?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I like that because, you know, to piggyback off the last point is, why should the customer trust us to deliver their buying experience online when you can't sell me something simple online? You can't even sell me something simple, and yet I'm supposed to trust you with the $50,000 purchase that's done digitally. To your point earlier, it's not congruent. It just doesn't fit.
Not congruent. I agree.
You know what I mean? Yep. So. I think one of the it's an area of opportunity to really, if your ultimate goal is to have that e-commerce-esque experience or be able to at least deliver the whole purchasing experience digitally, it needs to start with with everything. It just can't be the focus on the car. Like everything that the customer wants to be able to purchase, every appointment that they want to be able to schedule, every question that they want to have answered, the platform needs to be able to do that, right? And it needs to be able to do that effectively. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts there, but.
I fully agree. And hey, I'm going to throw your crowd a couple books. I have a great book suggestion. There's an amazing marketing book. It's called They Ask, You Answer. They Ask, You Answer. It's by a gentleman named Marcus Sheridan. He's just a marketing guru. And he goes into this whole deep dive concept on how, like, you know, using my little soulmate analogy, you think about your soulmate, that empty chair. What are they going through? What are their challenges right now? And just what are they asking you? And get those answers on your website. I had an e-commerce business 100 years ago. And the running joke was, how could we get the phone not to ring? And how could we get the email not to ding? And it was kind of like a little facetious joke.
I like that.
But what the point was, like, if somebody called us, like, I'd run over. I'm like, okay, why did the phone ring? Why is that answer not on the website somewhere? Somebody emailed, you know, hey, why did they email us? Why is that answer not on the website somewhere? So number one, if you could commit to, again, outteach the competition, be dedicated to help answer those soulmate questions, number one. Number two, I mentioned a book earlier, Blue Ocean Strategy. The dealerships, I don't know, you know, let's get our crystal ball out. If you're going to try to compete with Amazon, you can't, nobody on the planet can compete with Amazon. Walmart's even struggling to compete with Amazon. And Walmart's a, you know, $1 trillion company, right? I wouldn't try to compete with Amazon. I want to do something different than Amazon. I want to provide a much different experience. I want to provide a great digital experience that, you know, why I'm in this situation, why I'm feeling a sense of urgency, because now this 800-pound gorilla is getting into my space, right? But I'm not going to compete with Amazon, nor do I really want to compete with Amazon. How can I provide a different, more highly valuable, more rich and rewarding, positive experience, more trusting experience? Because if I buy a car and I have a bad experience and I bought it from Amazon, now what do I do? Who am I calling? Right. Who am I yelling at?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I love that. This is a great place to kind of bring it all together. And that's the, you know, like, have a good digital experience that sells your in-person experience, because that's the one thing that Amazon, to your point, like there's no Amazon in-store experience, right? So if your digital experience should be based on convincing me that my in-person experience is going to be superior, right? So convince me digitally to actually go and transact at your store. So I love that. Hey, dude, thank you so much for doing this, man. I really, really appreciate it. There is one question that we ask everybody that comes on the show. But before we do that, I just want to give you a couple minutes to tell us about you, how we can get in touch with you, if there's anything that you, businesses, services, anything that you offer for the audience that might be interested, you know, let us know.
Sure. Thanks, Herb. Again, thank you. What an absolute honor, privilege. I appreciate you reaching out. Kurt Anderson, C-U-R-T Anderson. You know what? I love to plug this is a relative of yours, my mom. So she's so if I'm like your eighth cousin, she's probably like your seventh, right? Or something like that. But my mom has a favorite book. Her favorite son wrote her favorite book. It's called Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. So if you want to find me, Google Stop Being the Best Kept Secret. It's a little book about some of these things that we just talked about here. Great book about how to help your business or how to help your branding, how to stop being the best kept secret. And secondly, you know, I want to, for our dealerships out there, Herb, you know, go to restaurants, man. Because like I can't have a restaurant experience online.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a dealership, I'm studying like pick your favorite restaurant or who's like who you feel is crushing it from like a service standpoint. Follow those restaurants, your grocery stores, you know, those places where I can't do it entirely online. That would be my last takeaway. Find me on LinkedIn, and my company is B2Btail. It's a little play on words. Instead of retail, it's B2Btail. So it's B2Btail.com. And I have like hundreds of live stream shows where I interview awesome, amazing people just like yourself. And that's where you can find me.
Right on. And we're going to put all this information in the show notes too, folks. So make sure to go there for the book, the website, all that stuff. So, Mr. Anderson, thank you so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it. There is one question that we ask everybody that comes on the show, and that question is, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years and why?
You know, I would love to see here's, you know what I feel? You're talking about disruption. You know what drives me nuts? Speed limit, man. I would love for somebody, like, how can we get up to 90 miles an hour? If whoever has that technology, and we could safely, right? If you and I were sitting, if we were having this conversation 100 years ago, and I was like, hey, Cousin Herb, I'm telling you, like, at someday cars are going to go 60, 70 miles an hour down this thing called it's going to be a four-lane street. I don't know what they're going to call it. You're going to be like, Cousin Kurt, you're insane. They're never going to do that. And sure enough, we're driving 70 miles an hour. I hope I live long enough that we have a technology where people are going 100, 120 miles an hour safely, calmly. I'm waving to you and you're the lane next to me. That's the technology that I'm longing for is right there. How's that?
There you go. Yeah. I mean, we can achieve that a couple of different ways. We could have autonomous vehicles, and if everybody's going at that rate of speed, then it's safe for everybody, right? And by that right. time, the cars will be able right. to recognize each other and all that stuff. Or we can just do what they do over in Europe and have one lane designated for it, which I think we should totally have here.
That's right.
I don't know why we don't have it, actually.
We got to figure that out, man. Just going 60, 70, yeah. just us Andersons can't go that yeah. slow, dude. I don't know.
Totally agree. All right. Thank you, Kurt, for joining me. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for tuning in. That's all the time that we have for today. And as usual, we'll talk later.